and welcome to Art Juice. This is honest, generous and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher. And today I'm joined by Jonathan Hall. Some of you know Jonathan. He was on the podcast previously. He's a published novelist, a playwright, a scriptwriter for BBC Radio, and also my best and oldest friend, but not oldest as in he's not the oldest friend I've got. He's, well, anyway, never mind.
I know exactly what you mean.
Hi, John.
Hello. Thank you for that brilliant introduction. Very good.
So I, as you know, if you were listening last week, and if you're listening back to this later, this might not make sense, but last week, Alice and I announced that we were going to get a bit more laissez-faire with the podcast and make episodes however we felt like doing them on whatever schedule we felt like doing them on. And I really felt like talking about a subject, this subject of starting new work, because that's where I am. And I immediately thought of Jonathan because he is about to start, or maybe we'll find out, has started a new novel. And it's that feeling of beginning all over again. And before we started recording, you were about to say something really wise and profound about two strands. So why don't you do that first?
I will say my wise and profound thought. It might be the only one I have this evening, so treasure it. Because actually, I see your work from the outside, and I see the journey you've been on these last few years, and I see how in that you've gone on the most fundamental new direction I can imagine, by going from the pretty representational to the abstract, and I love the freedom, and it's been very inspirational to me as a writer. So I see that in new work, there's two things. There is new work, as in a new piece of work, a new painting, a new story, a new novel. And then there is a new direction of work. And I think that can take more of a sort of a seismic change. For example, I'm writing novels now, but if I'd spoken with you 5 years ago, you and I know that we would just be talking about me writing theatre. That's all I wrote. And then suddenly now I'm writing, I've started my third novel. So I do think there's a, it partly talking to you as an artist gives me as a writer this sort of guide as to, like, yeah, you don't always have to write in the same way. You can write novels, you can then write plays. So that was my thought. That was my profound thought there.
How does that, because you do still write plays, like you've just had your new season, Everybody Trust, on Radio 4, for those who listened to the first two seasons, now has the third season. I'm saving it because I have a long drive in 2 weeks, and I'm saving the whole thing to listen on that long drive. But going from writing for radio, which is a very specific type of playwriting because you can't see any visuals, it's all audio, to writing novels, how do the two things, how does that impact, how does each impact the other? I suppose that's what I'm asking. When you know I have to start a novel now and I've been in play world, or vice versa, how is that shift?
It's a different discipline. And I'm trying to think of something comparable in the art world.
Well, I can give you one. My abstracts to do in my portraits that I've been doing.
Of course.
Totally different. Really different.
And I wouldn't have done the, I wouldn't have made those changes without a very, very specific motivation. I.e. with the radio, you know, Radio 4 says we want 3 radio scripts, and I'm not going to say, oh, but I'm just writing novels now. yes, of course I will. And so with you and the portraits, what was that driver, and how did that feel?
It was the fact that I was totally without inspiration for my normal type of painting. I'd just finished a whole series and had an exhibition, and I started working on some new ones. And what always happens for me, it's a bit like, imagine you started a novel with no plot and no characters, and you thought, oh, I'll just see what happens. I'll just start writing. That's what happens in painting if you have, for me anyway, if I have no concept. So I started these abstracts, but they went nowhere because I didn't know what I was trying to do. So I was just making a mess. And so I stopped painting those. But and a lot of people in that phase will just stop working for a while. I'll just give myself a breather and inspiration will come back. But because painting is so much part of my life, I don't want to stop. I just, but I don't want to just keep painting aimlessly either. And so for some reason, and I don't actually know what the initial idea was, that I thought I would paint Tracy Emin, who everyone knows is my art hero. But once I got started, I realized, oh, this is just what I need, because it's so different that it's like taking a holiday from my painting.
Yeah,
it's a new challenge, and it's difficult, and I don't know how to do it, and I have to learn, but it's completely different. And that's what I was, so it has now reinvigorated the abstract. So just this week, I started to have this feeling of, I feel like I want to go back to my abstracts. But it's been about a month of doing the portraits, which merged, which went into portraits of myself quite quickly. And so it's been about a month, but it's been like taking a really refreshing break. And I think I want to, because of that, it's made me realize I want to keep the two going in some way, because it's like when I'm tired of that, I can go over here and have something new. And that's what I was wondering with the radio plays and the novels, if that's what it feels like.
Short answer, yes, it does. There is an element of, I'll use the word, there's an element of fear, because whenever I start something, I'm never sure I can finish it. And the fear is this fear that I can't do it anymore.
Yes.
And that is all. And I had it this afternoon. I'm just doing the final edits on novel two. And I don't know if you get this with painting. There was one thing I was doing this afternoon. It reminded me of your process, because I had to make one change in the novel. And because I made that change, it affected lots of other different parts. It had this ripple effect. And I know you talked to me about sanding down and sanding over and painting over. And I felt that was what I was doing this afternoon. But then I had this, I discovered something else, and it was a real blind alley. Something had happened, and because that something had happened and I couldn't change it, it meant a load of other things now didn't make sense. My instinct then, I don't know if you have this, was then to step back from it rather than panickingly start scribbling all over the place and to say to myself, right, okay, leave that now. But listening to, and another thing. One, I've been at a couple of writing workshops recently, and I feel it's always fantastic to be back in that learning situation. I think there's this feeling that, you know, why would you need to go to a workshop, you know, because your book is on sale in the works. Well, it's, for me, it's a, and being on those workshops, I then got to write two short plays, which I never would have done otherwise. And that was a complete, it wasn't a story I'd have thought of or a format I'd have thought of. It was totally different. And that was very intoxicating. And when you were talking about your portraits, I do remember a number of years ago, I don't know, I'd say, because you know, you get to our age and you think something was like 3 months ago, and it was actually turned out to be 10 years. But you did a portrait of yourself every day.
Yes, it was. Oh, yeah, it was quite a while ago.
It was
2014, I want to say, or 2015.
It was a while. So when you started again on these portraits, it felt like you were picking up that journey again.
Mm-hmm.
And I do find when I'm writing, it's always going back to something that's been flickering away there, you know, something.
Well, that's such a good point, because I initially called this podcast Blank Canvas. And then I thought, we don't ever start with a blank canvas or a blank page. We don't. We start from where we've been somewhere. It might be years ago. It might be the last body of work that we completed or the last novel. But we never start completely from scratch again. And like you say, even if I'd never done portraits before, I would still be bringing in everything I've learned about abstract painting, which painting is painting and realistic painting is really abstract anyway, because it's not a three-dimensional face. It's a bunch of shapes on a piece of paper. But everything I've learned about using color and tonal contrast and composition and mood, all of that is being used now in this very different thing, just as everything you learned about storytelling in the process of working with a major publisher and writing novels probably feeds back into other types of writing.
Oh, it's completely the disciplines I learned from writing for the radio and the things I learned about structure.
Mm-hmm.
And about cutting, discarding what isn't working, all played their part in the novel writing massively.
Go on.
I was going to ask you a question now, because I was really curious. If you said you started painting portraits, and you said you found it really... It invigorated you, it re-energized you, and that was brilliant. If it hadn't, would you have then tried something else, or do you not know?
Yeah, I don't know what I would have done if I really hated it.
Yeah,
I thought, I wouldn't have kept doing it if I hated it, because I've learned that. You have to be feeling excited. When I always say you have to be feeling joy, and that confuses people because they think of joy as happiness, which it isn't.
No, it's...
You could be a terribly miserable painter painting about your deepest, darkest emotions, screaming as you paint, but you're still feeling a deeper sense of being aligned with the real you, and that's what I mean by joy. So if... I always follow that feeling of being, am I carried away and not remembering my own problems? Am I not thinking about daily life as time flying by because I'm embroiled in this and loving doing it? If I'd found I wasn't feeling like that, yeah, I think I would have either said, right, time for a complete break from painting, or maybe I would have tried some still lifes, or maybe I would have gone back to the abstracts but tried to come up. I don't know what I would have done, but somehow I just knew that I really follow the pulls. It's a bit different from your situation because you've got contracts and responsibilities, so you can't say to your publisher, actually, I feel the pull after two murder mysteries or two mysteries to write a love story set in the Caribbean, because they say, yes, well,
yeah, thank you. Very nice. but I feel like this story I'm writing at the moment, yeah, the larger outline is this sort of cozy crime, though I hate the phrase. Within that, I'm exploring, maybe in the same you will, way you are, and I'm exploring concepts of death and regret and the past and loss and memory in a way that you're dead right, gives me joy. And within that, like this morning, I suddenly felt the pull of an idea that needed to go into the mix. So even though there's a prescription to a sense, the way they like it is they do see your own voice, and it is your own voice, not your voice parroting out what they want to see.
Yes.
So
that kind of answers what was going to be my question, because I was going to say, when you start a new novel, because you mentioned fear, like, am I going to be able to do this again? I've done it twice. Can I do it three times? You have a framework. So I might have the framework of the idea of, let's say, I've just started these abstract paintings. I have a limited palette. They're all the same size. They're all consistent shape, and they're all the same size. And I'm only using three colors. So that's kind of my framework for what I'm doing. And I know what I want them to be about. But for you, I was going to say you've got the framework of characters that you've already created, because you're creating a series. So you've got that framework. But actually, it sounds like more the framework for you is the ideas you want to convey.
Yeah.
And the characters serve that rather than the other way around.
Completely. And if you realize that the three characters are in fact me doing that marvelous thing of being these three different people, then again, it's me exploring what's going on in my life as much as you are. And I wonder, I do, the more we talk about this, I have this sense that creativity is like the sort of molten core of the planet. Mm-hmm. And it comes out in different, I don't know if this analogy is quite working here, comes out in different ways, in writing, in art, but the root is common, this sense that we've got, because you were talking about your deepest, darkest fears. And if you manage to express those correctly in a way that works, there's great, you call it joy, I would say there's a great sort of satisfaction, a completeness about being able to do that.
Yeah. And it's that idea of having something to say that's a bit tricky to talk about sometimes, because there are some visual artists certainly who don't necessarily feel like they know what their thing they want to say is, and get a bit sensitive if that comes up, because, well, I don't have a set series of things I'm trying to say. And I'm sure there's all sorts of valid art that is created that way. But I really do have to have, I don't necessarily know when I start the paintings what they're about, but I have to find something, a concept, an idea, something to hang it on. Because otherwise, for me, and I'm just speaking for myself, it's aimless. And that's where I get lost. That's where I can't make decisions. That's where I was a month ago, because I have no thing I'm trying to say with my work.
Yeah, it's, again, actually, it's almost exactly the same with writing.
Yeah, because could you be in a position where, for example, you've got the same characters, you couldn't really come up with a plot, I would imagine, that was satisfying to you unless you knew what the underlying themes were?
Well, when I started the second novel, I knew what I wanted the story to be. But I had all sorts of problems because I didn't know what the where the characters were and where the characters were going. And I was then making the characters serve the story, whereas really the story serves the characters. And like you, I will start off, I have to have something to hang it on. I do have to have something to hang it on. I have to have the vague constructs in my head. You've got your three colors. I'm setting mine in the winter. You've got these certain frames and boards. I've got 9 days in December. So I've got those sorts of things. But what I find is I've worked out the first bit and I'm right. I've written the first bit. And now I've written the first bit, I can really, really go into the second bit. And the third bit is still, because I think in a three-act structure, the third bit is still a nebulous series of what's got to happen, but little more than that. So yeah.
It's bringing me to, do you remember when you stayed with me a few months ago and you found a novel that I started writing in about the, was about 2000.
Yeah.
And you found it and you said, oh, I started reading it and it's not that bad. And I said, oh, keep going, because what happened was exactly what we've been talking about. I can realize now I was very motivated. At the time, I wasn't painting. So I must have had all this creativity. And I thought, oh, I've got a story. And I read a lot at the time. So I wanted to write this novel. And I had some good characters. I can see that looking back on it. And I had some good plot points to a point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I didn't have any idea what the point of it was. I didn't have underlying themes. I didn't have an idea I was trying to convey. So what happened was after about 150 pages, it just ran aground because I didn't know what to do with anybody. I created this whole world and there were some amusing things and there were some good descriptions and all of that was in place. But I can see now what it needed was the framework of an idea. The theme is this, and then I'll make everybody serve that theme instead of, oh, let me see what these characters want to do. Because what they wanted to do was just give up halfway through and go for a nap.
Well, you know, you hear a conversation on a bus and you might transcribe that conversation word for word. If you were then going to share that with anyone, you would go through it, you would edit it, you would change it, there'd be repetition, it would be inconsequential, some bits wouldn't be clear, because life isn't art.
Mm-hmm.
Art represents life, but in doing so, it puts a style, it puts a structure or something upon it. And I find often with a lot of my writing, I'll be reading it and you just suddenly get this sense that nothing's happening. There's these marvellous conversations and these witty bits of doubt. And in a way, it's almost like the better the writing, the harder it is, because you're sort of reading all this stuff and then you think, yeah, but what's happening? Nothing's happening. There's no story. It's just events and what have you.
Yeah, which is exactly like in a painting when you have some really lovely paint effects have maybe happened, or two colors have sat together perfectly. And it's just beautiful, but it's in the wrong part of the painting altogether. It doesn't work with the composition. And it's like, oh, I can't move that over here. I don't work. Maybe if you work on paper, you could cut out bits and
copy. Oh, yeah. I've got a file called offcuts. So it all just goes in. I think it's heartbreaking. You've got no choice but to paint it. Have you ever been tempted to try and leave it and make it work?
You paint around it, but that's like you having one of those events happening, which is a fantastic event, but makes no sense and goes nowhere.
Yeah.
And if you left it in, your readers would be keeping going back to it in their minds. That's the thing about Chekhov. You can't have a gun on stage in the first act if it isn't going to go off in the third act or whatever he said.
Exactly.
So you'd have your readers going, but he mentioned that thing and it's never come back. And it would be an open loop in their brain. Well, if you try and make your painting work around that nice bit, it doesn't. Well, it's never worked for me, because what happens is you're trying to make a composition happen over in this corner instead of you need the action to be maybe down here and it's over there. And it just sends up where you eventually go, right, I'm covering it up. And then, phew, what a relief when it's gone, because all of a sudden the thing that was holding you back from making the painting is gone. But what I find helpful, a bit like your offcuts file, I take photographs and then it's always it's in my iPhotos that I made that lovely thing. And not surprisingly, really, but when I look at the finished painting, it's always better than that thing I was hanging on to over here.
Yeah.
Just like your novel is better without that weird little bit that you'd put in.
Well, very often you can move that weird little bit somewhere else.
Yeah.
And it will then give life to the rest of it and whatever. And sometimes you take it out. Sometimes other people are really good at seeing these bits that don't work. And my editor's great at taking out these sections, which, and in a way, if they're badly written, it's easy to take it out, or if it doesn't make sense. It's when it is, like you say, it's almost like the lovelier it is, the harder it is.
Yeah, I think lots of painters are listening to this going, oh, an editor sounds like such a wonderful thing, because that's one thing that we don't have in common, that we don't have someone to go, actually, if you just take that out and add some blue there, it'll be so much better.
Well, they are rare to come across. And by that, I mean people giving feedback about writing. It's a real skill, and I'm very, very fortunate. I've got two very, very good people in my life doing it. But I have had a lot of, it's like the feedback has been half-hearted. They haven't really read the piece. They don't understand it. They've been giving the feedback because that's part of what they have to do, not because they're trying to improve the piece. And going back to what you say about having these ideas and whatever, I wonder how many people out there are sort of scarred by getting lazy feedback or misplaced feedback, which can put them off trying these portraits or trying to write a sort of piece of abstract theatre or what have you.
I think the worst feedback in painting, and it's probably the same in writing, the worst feedback is when the person says, you should do this, and the you should do this is based on their personal tastes and preferences.
Oh, they're trying to get you to paint the picture they would have done.
Yeah, instead of them listening to what you're trying to do and then saying, okay, in order to get your plot points across more strongly, in order to get your themes across, if you edited this character or took that section out, everything would be clearer. That's helping you say what you want to say, whereas I think it would look great with some red in that corner is nothing to do with what I want to do. But yeah. I want to go back to this idea that you mentioned in the beginning about fear. So you're beginning this novel, and I know you've kind of got started now, but when you're going on, so for everybody listening, Jonathan had one novel published, one is coming out, is it next March?
March.
And that's already written and off at the publisher, but now you have...
That was the thing I was talking about today, final edits, sort of...
Oh, you're doing final edits. Now you have to create number three, and you mentioned this idea of fear. So describe that feeling. What's going through your mind as you start the third novel?
I suppose the first thing I would say is there is no such thing as a clean start to a novel, i.e. I don't open up a book and start writing. I get ideas. I have ideas floating and emerging, images, situations, what have you. And the fear is that at some point I had to say to my editor, right, when I was pitching for a second contract, this is my idea. And the fear was that what I had, all those nebulous threads, wouldn't begin to coalesce. And I would be pitching for something and saying, I can do something, when maybe I couldn't. Now, if I'm just writing for me, it's a different sort of fear. And the fear is always, I've always got that critic sitting here on my shoulder saying, you can't really do this, actually. You do know you're not very good at this, you know. You know, because they rejected you from writing EastEnders, for goodness sakes. And, you know, but it's a different sort of fear. That's a personal fear. But
are they both going at the same time?
Yeah, they are good friends. One on one shoulder, one on the other, having a right old cheese and wine party in my mind. And then it's a process of being afraid and being not afraid. It's a bit like you're frightened about going to the dentist. Well, I used to be frightened about going to the dentist because of the pain. Now I'm frightened about actually losing teeth. So you go to the dentist and you're afraid, and then you're there and it's a great relief and you come away. It's this like, oh, can I do it? Yeah, I can do that bit. That's fine. And then, whoa, no, hang on, there's something else now. So it's sort of fear, no fear, fear, no fear. Because I was feeling quite, you know, chipper and good about this part one and whatever. And then I started thinking about part two and thinking, no, hang on, I've got all this. So it's that. But it makes it sound like the writing process. I think we can't lose sight of the fact that we both love what we do. I love writing. I'm going to say it again a third time. I love writing. So I'm not this person who's sort of trembling all the time. But I think in what you love, there is always that element of you want to realise it as best you can.
What do you do? So you've got these two voices.
Yeah.
So how do you carry on, given one saying, you know, you can't do this, you've been rejected before, they're only buying your novel out of kindness, they don't really like it. And then you've got the other voice saying, the publishers won't like this, you know, the audience, that they've got to sell books, blah, 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 blah. How do you keep going? Because this is the thing I find my students most stuck on, beginner level or mid-stage painters, even sometimes really experienced painters, where it's the voices take over and they get frozen because they can hear all that and they take it so seriously they stop making their work.
I think for me, and I am just feeling for me, speaking for me, it's being grounded in the real world. It's been grounded in the world I live in, which is the school I work in, my relationship, my family, my friend, you, how many times have I rung you up in a, and what that does is it gives a context. I think, you know, we're all frightened and concerned about many things, but when you have a context, which is something where you operate, where you're successful. I know I can go into school, I can run an assembly, I can sort out a problem with the dinner ladies. I know that I can make a birthday cake for my friend the week after next. I know I could come around and see you and we can watch Downton Abbey 2 and have a good time. And all of that gives a perspective for those voices. And it enables me to think, that's not the whole picture. That's not, you know, maybe listen to them, check against them, whatever, but that they are not reality.
Yeah. I find it really helpful to, I think it was Seth Godin. He said, if you don't have some sense of imposter syndrome when you're creating, then you're not doing it right, because you must be doing something that's so easy for you if you don't feel a bit like, oh, I'm probably not the best person to be doing this, that you're not doing it right. And then he said, and you are an imposter. We all are. Like, who are we to say we can do this? Like, once you stop, I think that's kind of what you've just said as well, but once you stop taking yourself so seriously,
Yeah.
If you go, yeah, I'm probably not the best painter that ever lived. I'm not the best novelist there ever was.
Oh, God, no. Could you imagine if it?
What
a thing to live up to.
I can let all that go and just be like the best I can be. But there is, and I know that sounds a bit daft, but sometimes with beginners, I feel a bit like that is what's in their head. Well, I'm never going to be as good as Picasso, so what's the point? But we are, okay, so you're not. You will, who knows? But say you're not, just go, okay, I'm not, but what can I do?
I mean, didn't Van Gogh sort of spend his whole painting life feeling he wasn't as good as other people?
He wasn't as good as Gauguin, who he was living and working with for a little bit of time, and he felt like he wasn't as good as, And everybody feels that.
Well, it's funny you were saying that. It made me think, I know a lot of actors, and the very, very best actors I know who might be hugely experienced are always terrified before they go on stage or they perform. And by that, I don't mean they're quivering in a corner, but they are very tense. They are in a state of real, can I do this? I want to give this my best. And the actors who I've seen who aren't so good don't have that fear. They think, I can do this, and they go and do it.
Yes. It's John Lennon used to throw up before he went on stage.
John Lennon did? Really?
John Lennon was so nervous. At the time, he was one of the most famous musicians in the world, and he actually gave up touring because it was too hard for him to go on stage.
Yeah.
So I think the thing is when, and I know lots of people listening are not beginner painters, but if you ever get to that point where it freezes you, the fear, I think it really helps to know everybody who I admire. Every artist I look up to has felt like this. Every writer, every musician, everybody who's doing anything worthwhile. There's a David Bowie quote, which I'm going to completely mess up because we're not editing, so I'm not going to go look it up. But it's something about you should feel like you're swimming a little bit out of your depth.
Yeah.
Always. You should never feel like, oh, I can do this. Because if you can do it, okay, if you were just going to do another, your third novel was going to be like the first one, like the second one, and you know you can pull it off because it's a formula. Let's say you've come up with a formula for the plot and the formula for the characters, and I'll do that, that, and that. And there are writers who do that. There are like certain types of stories where that is very much the case, but it wouldn't be so much creative. It feels more like it would be a production line.
Yeah, yeah. It would feel boring.
Yeah. You ever want to be in a position where you feel you can do it, because where you know you can do it, because then you're in boring land?
Yeah, I know. I mean, in some ways, I do it. I always had this image of myself as a writer, you know, like the beginning of Murder, she wrote, and she sat at her typewriter with a big grin on her face, rattling away in between washing her windows and strolling around Cabot Cove with a fishing net. And I think, yeah, I would like that life. But of course, I realize that is not true at all. And no, I wouldn't, because it's only when you're out of your comfort zone that you can, I think, really live, you know, really, really, I can't think of a better word, really live for it, live.
Mm. And that feeling of being alive in the creation, I'm sure this is true for writing too. It's certainly true for painting, which is one of the most direct experiences, because when you look at a painting, you're standing in front of the exact piece the artist created, unlike a piece of music which is played by other people, or a novel which is printed. But I still think it applies to writing. You can feel when the writer's putting themselves into it and when they're a little bit on the edge. You can feel when the painter is taking some risks versus the safe thing. You must read novels. I know you read a lot of novels in for your work as well as, and you must feel sometimes like, okay, this is formulaic. There's no heart in this.
I know. I'm always very, very...
I won't ask you who they are.
Oh, no. Well, I wouldn't say, and I'm going to say the other thing, that when I read a novel of any genre, which is just always beautiful, always out there, always challenging, always creative, then it kind of reminds you why you read. Because sometimes when you're reading a novel and it's not working for you, my first instinct is there's something wrong with me. I'm not clever enough. I'm not bright enough. I'm too tired. I'm not giving this enough attention. But then, of course, there are novels you read and you find yourself sitting up and staying up late to finish them. And so, yes, you do get that sense. But then, of course, you know, there are some things that you read which obviously are written by people in that great frame or whatever, and for whatever reason, they're not working for you.
And I think that you can tell when fear was present at the beginning. That's what I'm trying to say. I think you can tell when there was an element of risk or an element of putting your whole self into it versus... it's a bit like the difference between a brilliant Beatles song and a boy band song written by a committee to be a hit. It's fine. Yeah. There's a place for the boy band song written by a committee to be a hit, and we all can enjoy that. But there's a total difference between that and Yesterday.
Yeah.
No committee could ever write Yesterday. It just wouldn't ever happen because that isn't how hit songs are written. They're written formulaically, whereas a hit song which comes from the actual heart will be just worlds ahead. They're not even in the same league. And I think it's the same for writing or painting, but I don't think that's about literary, like it has to be high-end, really convoluted and complicated and take lots of concentration and have 500-600 pages. I don't think it's that, because it can be a really lovely read that has that heart and soul to it.
There's some children's books that I read as a child that I can still read and reread. I think one of the most beautiful children's books, which really to me overlap art and writing, are the Moomin Troll books. Mm-hmm. She writes in real images and emotion, whatever. And those you can read and reread again. And yeah, you do read a lot of stuff that is formulaic. But like you say, I mean, there is a place for it in this.
But like, I know, speaking of children's books, I know Enid Blyton is not now fashionable anymore, and there's all sorts of problems with Enid Blyton, but The Magic Faraway Tree and her whole soul was in those books. It must be because I've carried it with me my whole life, and still it's made such an imprint on me. And going back to this idea of starting, what I'm feeling is that she must have felt when she was doing those books, the movement, Tove Jansson must have felt, I don't think I can do this. Like they must have, because there's so much in it. And so to go back to this idea of fear and starting again, I think what we're saying is you absolutely have to have the element of risk and fear at the beginning to some degree. And if you have that, you're on the right track. If you feel yourself going, actually, I'm fine, I can do this, this is easy, that doesn't mean you shouldn't be that way, because who are we to say?
Yeah.
But I'm more trying to speak to the people who feel bad for being frightened, to say, actually, that is the necessary ingredient that actually says you are on the right track. Keep going.
Judi Dench said, fear is fuel in the petrol tank.
Yes. I think we should wrap up with Dame Judi Dench, don't
Dame
you?
Dame Judi, what a brilliant way to wrap up. Yes, absolutely. So fear is the fuel in the petrol tank.
Well, thank you so much. This has been lovely, as always. I mean, it's like we're just having one of our normal chats on the phone, but this time I can see you, which is nice, because when we record these podcasts, we do them on Zoom, so we can actually see each other. Maybe when we have chats, we should do it on Zoom instead of doing it on the phone, so we can see each other.
Yeah, maybe we should do that, actually.
Yeah, why do we have to do it on the phone?
Because it's so good, because I can see all the pictures behind you on your wall and everything.
Yeah.
It's just, no, we must do that. We must do that.
Anyway, okay. That's it for us this week, everybody. Thank you so much, Jonathan. You can find Jonathan, what is your Instagram handle?
Is it handle
on Instagram?
I don't know. I've just really got my head around what Instagram is. That shows you what a dinosaur I am. It's JM Hall Writer.
Oh, and there's underscores under each. So Hall JM Writer. Yes, because Jonathan goes under the name JM Hall as a novelist. And you can find his first novel in all good bookstores. Or online if you're abroad. I'm sure you can find it on Book Depository with free shipping. What is it called, John?
It's called A Spoonful of Murder.
And what's the next one called that's coming up in March?
It's called A Pen Dipped in Poison. And if you found my Instagram, the cover was revealed. And so there's this nifty little bit of animation with the cover and what have you. And maybe another time we'll talk about how the titles and the covers and stuff all came about as well.
Yes, that would be a good topic. So we can talk about titling paintings, titling books.
Exactly. A good one.
All right. Well, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Who is John Butler?
He's the vicar.
I was like, who the hell's joining me?
Well, it's when I do the church meditation Zoom, I use the vicar's thing to log in on. That's that. Yes, it does all the ask. But this is all audio, isn't it? They won't be seeing it in my cardigan.
Yeah, no, you don't.
I was with my sister at the weekend, and we'd been together for a while, and then she suddenly said, "You do know you got toothpaste all down your face." This was after about an hour, you know. Yeah.
And I didn't know.
Yeah, exactly.